Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning to you. It's Wednesday, April the 1st. Welcome to this edition of Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up in Nigeria, President Goodluck Jonathan has conceded defeat and the Electoral Commission, INEC, has declared Muhammadu Buhari the winner of the elections.
Muhammadu Buhari of APC, having satisfied the requirements of the law, and scored the highest number of votes, is hereby declared the winner and is returned elected.
This is the first time in Nigeria's history that an opposition party has democratically taken control of the country from the ruling party. We'll be hearing how APC supporters are celebrating.
People have started already celebrating in Gombe. People are on different kind of vehicles. They are just celebrating. And you can hear from the background, people are just celebrating.
And in the next 25 minutes, we will also be bringing you stories from Uganda and Rwanda. Do stay tuned for this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
In Nigeria, Muhammadu Buhari has won the election. He congratulated President Goodluck Jonathan this morning for peacefully relinquishing power. Buhari told journalists President Jonathan was a worthy opponent and he extended the hand of fellowship to him. Buhari, a former military ruler, has become the first Nigerian politician to unseat a sitting leader at the ballot box. Shortly before we went on the air, I called our correspondent Ben Shemang in the Nigerian capital Abuja and asked him what the mood was like there.
Honestly, Mark, not just Abuja. It's all over the country. It is unprecedented. People are just jubilating. And, of course, this jubilation also cuts across. But again, even though some people within the party that has been defeated are picking a bone, but many people feel that by President Jonathan accepting this defeat, bloodshed has been blocked permanently in Nigeria.
Was Buhari's win a surprise?
It was not really a surprise, bearing in mind that the ruling party did not get its act together. More so, many of the people from the ruling party were the ones who crossed over and formed the opposition, including former President Obasanjo. So the opposition became so formidable. Apart from that, there was also the lackluster approach to national issues in Nigeria on the side of the ruling party. Insecurity, unemployment, the economic fortune, misfortune in that area, and quite a lot of other things. So Buhari came in handy, and of course he's a man who has always stood against corruption, bearing in mind what he did when he was military ruler.
What was the main reason why people rejected Goodluck Jonathan?
Goodluck Jonathan was rejected because, too much of bloodbath. Having Boko Haram came in 6 years, the lackluster approach against this sect was on the side of the government. Apart from that, you could see that universities could go on strike for close to a year. That was another minus. Again, people who were supposed to be by his side were rather busy fighting within themselves. The chairman of the party himself couldn't deliver his own state. The vice president also could not deliver so much in his own state. So quite a lot of divided factors put the party in disarray. And therefore, Nigerians were able to see that the ruling party would no longer deliver. Most of them were tired of seeing the same faces singing the same song, no change, no change.
Jonathan has conceded defeat. Does this mean that the whole of the PDP has accepted the results?
Not really, because all the political parties that were in when the chairman of the commission declared Buhari the winner, thereafter it was expected that every political party that had an agent there and all the 14 agents were in there, they all signed an agreement, signed the certificate. But the PDP refused to sign, saying that they still have issues, even when the president had already told, congratulated the president-elect. But the Nigerian law is, if a candidate feels injured, he can go to court. If he does not go to court, the party can go to court. But again, this will not go to anywhere, bearing in mind that people's opinion will prevail on the ruling people's party. They will withdraw anything they want to do that will scuttle democracy.
What lies ahead for Buhari now that the results have been declared? What comes next?
Buhari has a lot of heaps of rubbish to clear. Corruption, he has to face it head on. Outside that, Boko Haram is still an issue. He has to tackle that head on. If you check electricity, for how long will Nigeria remain without electricity? Buhari will have to tackle that.
That was our correspondent in Abuja, Ben Shemang. Let's go to Gombe now, a northern Nigerian city, which is also a Buhari stronghold. Our correspondent, Muhammad Al-Amin, was out on the streets on Tuesday with people who were celebrating Buhari's victory. This is what he had to tell us.
People started celebrating even before the Independent Electoral Commission announced the result. People have started already celebrating in Gombe. People are on different kind of vehicles. They are just celebrating. And you can hear from the background, people are just celebrating.
And what do northeastern Nigerians expect as a first priority for Buhari?
Number one priority, I think they are hoping for security challenges to be over and business activities to be back in the region, so that everybody will live in peace and harmony, and the economy will develop. The education and all other sectors of life will be back intact.
Will the economy be boosted in the north now that Buhari has won the election?
Definitely, because as I'm talking to you, many markets were closed for over 2 years, some over 3 years. There is not any business activities in such markets. So the thing, if the security challenges is over, everybody will be going back to his business, and there is a... people will go back to their farms so that they will continue their agricultural activities.
From what you have been hearing, what do people say, actually, about this year's election?
Generally, people commended the election. They commended the Independent Electoral Commission. They commended the general conduct of the voters. They also commended the conduct of the security agencies, more especially in Gombe, where we experienced a Boko Haram attack in two local government areas.
Muhammad Al-Amin in Gombe, northeastern Nigeria, talking to Assumpta Lattus. You're listening to Africa Link, coming to you from Deutsche Welle in Bonn, Germany.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
And now for an analytical view of the election, Assumpta called Manji Cheto, vice president at Tenio Intelligence, a risk analysis organisation in the UK. What did she think was likely to change in Nigeria under Muhammadu Buhari?
I mean, I think obviously the real answer to that is nobody knows, has a definitive answer to what his government could be. But they are clearly important clues that we can take from his previous two and a half year stint, really, as military leader. And one, I think the most symbolic thing about his victory is the fact that he's got a reputation as one of the most incorruptible leaders in Nigeria. And in a country where that reputation is not believed to exist for people occupying a senior position, that is quite significant. Now, it's left to be seen whether or not that's going to have a positive impact on his government and the people that actually take on the positions under his government. So I think that obviously is quite significant. And, you know, again, if you look at what is happening with Nigeria's key economic indices, everything from Nigerian stocks, Nigerian bond yields, a lot of those things have actually decelerated quite rapidly. And I think that's a reflection of waning investor confidence in the country, with Nigeria now being able to show, demonstrating to the world that it's capable of changing a government, and potentially a guy who has got a positive reputation on something that Nigeria has always had a negative reputation, that is quite significant. That boost, that investor boost, could actually see more money being pumped into the Nigerian economy.
And do you see any immediate change forthcoming in the way Nigeria is handling the insurgency?
I don't think so. I think one of the things that, you know, we definitely can expect before we start talking about a change of strategy is a change in security personnel. Buhari, again, having been, you know, a military leader, he understands the Nigeria's military, its weaknesses, its strengths, and he's certainly going to want to have people that he can trust and people that he can work with. So I think the most immediate change that we're going to see is a change in security apparatus.
He is a former military ruler, as you said, but he says he's now a converted Democrat. How much doubt is there in Nigeria about his commitment to democratic governance?
I think, you know, you're going to get a sort of 50-50 doubt. They are people that are going to be incredibly cynical, and that's one of the key challenges that he has, is actually reconciling with the people who feel aggrieved by Jonathan's exit from office. So, yeah, I think at the moment there's a fair bit of cynicism on that front.
Nigeria is divided into mainly Muslim North and mainly Christian South. Buhari is a Muslim from the North. Will he be able to unite the country behind him?
I think, obviously, the you know, the Muslim North, the Christian South dichotomy is far more complex than that. I mean, if you look at the South itself, particularly the Southwest, there's a considerable number of Muslims in the Southwest. And Buhari has aligned himself with the Southwest, where even though people are, you know, in practice, or in theory, actually, Muslims will identify with the Islamic faith and not really, you know, they don't actively practice Islam. So I think it's far more complex than that. And I think that a lot of Nigerians will start to look beyond that if he can actually demonstrate himself to be, you know, a true Nigerian president as opposed to a northern president.
These elections are not over. Their gubernatorial and state assembly polls on April 11th. Mm-hmm. How do you see them playing out in the wake of Buhari's victory?
Well, obviously, you know, the election contest, the presidential elections have been tightly contested, so I expect the same to happen. There are obviously going to be a number of key flashpoints. Key battlegrounds will include places like the economically powerful Lagos, Rivers State, which is the largest oil-producing state. And again, the outlook of those elections are quite significant for whether or not we can look at the broader electoral process and judge it to be free and fair and quite credible.
What about its relations, I mean, Nigeria's relations with its neighbour? Do you see it changing under President Buhari?
I honestly don't think that's going to be a priority for the new government. I think the priority will certainly be dealing with the internal challenges and some of the military weaknesses. And once that is actually addressed, I think that the relationship with the neighbours, which has been a bit you know, tense in recent times over security, will start to improve.
Manji Cheto, Vice President at Tenio Intelligence in London, speaking to Assumpta Lartus. And now we leave the Nigerian elections for the time being and move on to other African stories.
Behind the headlines.
Representatives from the African Economic Communities and Trading Blocs have been meeting in Rwanda. They've been saying that African governments should encourage and facilitate free movement of individuals within the continent and offer alternative channels for legal migration. They want to find ways of discouraging young Africans from making the hazardous journey to Europe. From Kigali, Flora Kaitesi reports.
Every year, thousands of Africans risk their lives on dangerous journeys across the Mediterranean Sea to seek for better living conditions in Europe. Experts say stringent restrictions of movement within Africa are to blame for talented Africans looking for jobs elsewhere. Dr. Habele Matlosa, the Director for Political Affairs at the African Union Commission, says it's time to change the policies.
We want to encourage movement of our people freely in their own country, in their own continent, and reduce this movement towards Europe, where our people even, you know, go as far as, you know, risking their own lives, trying to cross the Sahara Desert, trying to cross the Mediterranean Sea, losing lives on a daily basis. So if we can open up borders, relax visa restrictions, and allow our people to move in Africa, we'll reduce this movement towards Europe, which is dangerous to the lives of migrants themselves.
The argument for tighter border control has often been in the name of security. But according to Dr. Matlosa, if African leaders work together, they would have less to worry about.
That's a challenge. So we have the issue of conflict, the issue of security, the issue of terrorism, but also the issue of leadership. This thing requires leadership. It requires political commitment. It requires political will. So leadership has to be there. It's part of the reason why we have this ECOWAS being fairly advanced, you have EAC fairly advanced, it's because there's committed leadership towards integration in these regions, there's committed leadership towards free movement.
The intra-regional migration conference was attended by all four development communities in sub-Saharan Africa. These communities comprised the Southern Africa Development Community, SADC, the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, the East African Community, EAC, and the Economic Community of Central African States, ECAS. In East Africa, EAC members Rwanda, Uganda, and Kenya have facilitated free movement of people by accepting the use of identity cards, student IDs, and voter cards to traverse the three countries. Rwanda implemented the visa on arrival policy for African nationals. Anaclet Kaliwata is the Director General of Rwanda's Immigration and Emigration.
In every aspect of work, and particularly in aspect of dealing with movement of people, there are challenges. But the challenge is an opportunity that to be able to exploit the capacities of others when they come to your country. It may be a problem, but it depends on how you deal with it. So the challenges are there, but I think the most important thing are the opportunities.
At the conference, representatives recommended that all regional economic communities facilitate free movement of people. They say this could help millions of potential migrants, especially in West Africa. The International Organization for Migration, IOM, reports that 8.4 million migrants originate from the West. This is 90% of all African migrants. William Lacey Swing, IOM's Director General, believes that governments should outgrow the fear of impacts of free movement.
Look, a lot of this is built on fears. I think a lot of these are unfounded fears. A lot of people feel that the migrants are coming to take jobs away from the locals, when in fact, much of the unemployment in a country is structural unemployment, because most of the migrants coming in start at a fairly low level. There's that. There's stereotypes also, stereotypes that maybe migrants are bringing in disease or bringing in a criminal element. That's particularly tough today with all the concentration on terrorism and so on. But these are basically unfounded fears and stereotypes that do a lot of harm. And we're here basically to support the idea of the free movement of people.
The Intra-Regional Migration and Labor Mobility Conference is the first of its kind. Participants hope that by launching such discussions, African countries will understand that migration and labor mobility is a powerful driver for economic development.
Flora Kaitese reporting.
Listen up to Africa Link's new frequencies. From March 30th, catch us in West Africa from 7 to 8 a.m. UTC on 15,275 and 15,560 kilohertz. Africa Link. Get the stories you need to know about.
In Uganda, the trial of 13 men accused of taking part in Al-Shabaab bombings that killed 76 people in 2010 was postponed on Tuesday after a prosecutor was shot dead. The police have vowed to hunt down the killers of Joan Kagezi, acting assistant director of public prosecution, who was killed by assailants on a motorbike as she was driving home with three of her children on Monday evening. So far, nobody has claimed responsibility for the killing. This report now from our correspondent in Kampala, Alex Jutup.
News of the killing of Joan Kagezi has shocked many people in Uganda. So far, no individual or group has claimed responsibility for the attack. Police reported that unknown gunmen on a motorcycle shot Kagezi two times while she was traveling in her car with two of her children. The children were unharmed, but the state attorney was declared dead on the scene. Kagezi was part of a team currently prosecuting about a dozen men linked with the Uganda bombing in 2010 that left 72 people dead. The Somali Islamist group Al-Shabaab claimed responsibility for that attack. The Ugandan police has, however, refused to point fingers at Al-Shabaab, but spokesperson Fred Enanga told DW the militants cannot be ruled out.
There are people who are trying to connect it so fast, but we have to move cautiously because at this stage we don't have any information. Until we arrest the suspects, then we shall establish the motive.
According to Enanga, Kagezi was issued a police protection, but she turned down the offer. The police, however, insisted on deploying security detail at her private residence.
She had received threats at one time. VIP protection unit was actually offering personal security to her. She didn't feel comfortable enough with having close bodyguards for various reasons. She dropped the idea. Of course, we found that we couldn't compel her since it was her wish. And for the various reasons that she gave, we only now sustained the bodyguards at her residence. And I think their silence must have had knowledge of that.
Kagezi was directly employed under the Directorate of Public Prosecutions, an office many Ugandans believe is much understaffed. Director Mike Chibita told me the Office of the Public Prosecutions is committed to continue prosecuting all the cases Kagezi was handling.
In case it was meant to scare and intimidate, I'd like to assure the whole country that we at the directorate, this just increases our resolve to fight crime and will not be deterred by this.
As the news broke out, private lawyers offered their services to the directorate free of charge to cover all of Kagezi's high-profile cases. Kagezi has been at the center of other major cases, including the investigation into the death of Muslim clerics in eastern Uganda earlier this year. The death of John Kagezi comes amid repeated warnings that Al-Shabaab is planning fresh attacks in Uganda. The Uganda police is so far looking into all the investigations and the prosecutions that Kagezi carried out. But an involvement into the death of Kagezi by the Somali militant group is being treated with a likely possibility.
Alex Jetta reporting.
Opinion.
And in Opinion this week, we return to our top story. We've been hearing that people in many cities in Nigeria have been celebrating Muhammadu Buhari's election victory.
We know there's never been any perfect election in the world, but this is close to perfecto.
Yeah, all Nigerians are very happy today. As you can see, me, I've been shedding tears, tears of joy, so we are grateful.
This is the best, credible, and the most good election so far in Nigeria.
What do you think should be the first priority of the new president? I'll give you that question once again. What do you think should be the first priority of the new president? Send us your thoughts in a text message to country code 49 160 957 59510 or in an email to feedback.africa@dw.de or in a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. And now, before we leave you here on Africa Link, a summary of our main stories. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan has congratulated his rival, Muhammadu Buhari, on winning last weekend's election. Regional groups have been calling on African governments to facilitate free movement of individuals within the continent and provide alternative legal channels for migration. And a trial in Uganda of 13 men accused of taking part in Al-Shabaab bombings that killed 76 people in 2010 has been postponed after a prosecutor was shot dead. And there we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. Do join us again at the same time tomorrow for more stories from Africa. Remember, the address for your comments is Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. As always, thank you for listening. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.